You are listening to Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and graphic novels. We're sitting down today with Kurt Busick. Thanks a lot for sitting down with us.
My pleasure.
So, you know, you're kind of known as the writer of just about everything, and you have several projects out right now that I wanted to go over with you. I wanted to start with Dracula, Company of Monsters, actually. Vampires are kind of the in thing right now, but yet your take on Dracula is very different than sort of the approach that we've seen other writers take. Sort of what was your door into it? How did you go about creating this?
Well, I was always fascinated by the fact that Dracula, as a real person, was a folk hero to the Romanians and still is. But outside of Romania, Dracula is considered, you know, literature's greatest villain. So part of that is because a lot of what we know about Dracula, about the real Dracula, came from the Russians who didn't like him. So it's propaganda against him. Part of it comes from the fact that, well, you know, he was a brutal sumbitch, but he was a brutal sumbitch in a world where brutal sumbitches were more the rule than the exception. But I always wanted to do something playing with the idea that Dracula is a hero to the people that he considers his people, and he's a villain to people he doesn't like. And how can you, you know, how can you explore that dichotomy? At the same time, I'm also fascinated by the idea that modern day, the closest thing we have to feudalism in the modern day is corporatism. So corporations are like feudal nations, except they don't have any geography. And as such, they don't have any boundaries, any loyalty to, these are the people, we have to keep them healthy because they are our people and that's not going to change. Corporations can always go someplace else, get extra people. So playing the idea of Dracula as the feudal lord and folk hero versus what he would see as feudalism gone horribly, horribly wrong, was an idea that I'd always wanted to play with. And we have the advantage in Dracula, Company of Monsters, that I couldn't make it trendy, modern-day, sparkly vampires if I wanted to, because I've never read any of that stuff. I've never seen any of the movies. I don't really know what that is. I'm interested in Dracula, the Bram Stoker character, and the historical guy, and I want to build from that. And I've been very, very lucky to have Daryl Gregory to work with as co-writer and Scott Godlewski on the art, and I think they've been doing a great job. But, you know, you asked where it came from. That's where we got it.
Well, and in the first, I mean, Dracula's almost at this point in time, we're three issues into it, I believe. The first collection's coming out soon. Mm-hmm. And he's basically a supporting character in his own book. You're doing a really great job of building up this sort of modern world, like you said, this corporate feudalism almost.
Well, thank you. The way I look at it, Dracula is one of the main characters, but I view it as a story, Dracula, the Company of Monsters. So Dracula is a lead character, but so is the company. It's right there in the title. You know, we have a viewpoint character, but he's not the lead character. He is, again, one of the ensemble. And I think it's more interesting to take a novelistic approach and see how Dracula acts as a force rather than say, well, we got to be, you know, on Dracula 24/7.
So have you had any, I don't know, challenges or setbacks or anything that you've sort of gone up against creating this where, I don't know, almost you've wanted to go a direction or, you know, you've had a hard time figuring out how to get him into modern day? Or has it just always been one of those things where you had it in your head that, wow, this is what his response to a modern world would be?
Pretty much always in my head. I've had the idea kicking around for years. And I have a big advantage here in that my job is to be the creator of the series. So I came up with a basic idea, and I wrote up an outline that's 12 issues long. So it's 12 issues worth of story structures. And then I turn it over to Daryl Gregory, and he's got to do all the heavy lifting. So if I say, you know, Dracula's remains are part of the holdings of this international company, and they're buried somewhere on an island in the Aegean Sea that has come into the company's possession, I'm done. He's got to figure out how to, you know, how to explain that well on the comic book page. And I think my, you know, I think my story outlines have been straightforward and visual enough so that he hasn't had a huge problem. But, you know, I've finished my work on those 12 issues. He's working on, I think, issue 7 or 8 at this point. But you know, I've sort of handed it over to him. And whenever he finishes a script, I read through it and I go, oh, this is nice. This is nice. This bit could be a little bit more clear, or I'd change the wording here. But he's doing such a beautiful job. I'm almost the audience at this point. I'm just sort of a critical first reader. So if there's, you know, if there's headaches and sweating over the details at this point, it's Daryl that gets to do it rather than me. So that's nice.
Sounds like a pretty cush gig. So, you know, speaking of things from the past, you have a couple of books out now that are actually, I guess, re-releases or things that have been out of print for a while. Let's start with The Wizard's Tale. That's one that a lot of people may not be familiar with.
The Wizard's Tale is a project I did back in the early 90s with Dave Wenzel, and it didn't come out for years because we did it for Eclipse Comics. And just before the first issue was supposed to come out, Eclipse went bankrupt. So the rights reverted to us, and we had the ability to take it someplace else, except that an entire issue's worth of the original art was at the color separators, and the color separator was in Hong Kong. And the color separator didn't want to give any art back until they got paid what Eclipse owed them. And that was between them and Eclipse, but the artwork was Dave's, you know? So it took a while to straighten that out. And once we straightened it out, we brought the project to Wildstorm, who were then just taking over Astro City. And we did it as a graphic novel. We took this, what was going to be 3 square-bound 48-page issues, and did it as one hardcover graphic novel. And they did a nice job, but it you know, there were some production problems here and there. So when it went out of print, the rights reverted to us. We were able to take it to IDW, and we would go into the original color separations and computer correct them so that they looked more like Dave's artwork. And we relettered it, and we redesigned the whole book, and we did it in a larger format on really nice paper. It's, you know, some of the best reproduction a book that I've worked on has ever had. IDW did a beautiful job. Getting into the story for a minute, it's the story of an evil wizard who really isn't very good at being evil. He's the last in the long line of some of the worst evil wizards in the world, and he just doesn't have the heart for it. But it's the family tradition, and he's trying to do what he's been brought up to do, and he ends up saving the world. So there's some humor to it. It's kind of a whimsical, satirical fairy tale of sorts. I'm very, very happy with how it came out. Dave Wenzel, who did the comics adaptation of The Hobbit, did the artwork, and he did an absolutely beautiful job. It's nothing like anything else I ever did, but it's one of the books that I'm the proudest of.
Well, we were just thumbing through it here at the table, and it is absolutely gorgeous, just the artwork in it. And like you said, the storytelling in it, it's, you know, it's hard to put your finger on it. Is it a fantasy? Is it, you know, because there's some reality type pieces with it as well. So it's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Another one that's come out recently is Shock Rockets, back in print again.
Mm-hmm. That's another, back when Mark Wade, Stuart Immonen, Barry Kitson, George Perez, Mike Waringo, other guys, and I put together Guerrilla Comics. Stuart Immonen and I did a 6-issue science fiction series called Shock Rockets about the elite pilots of a squadron of half-human, half-alien technology ships who are protecting the world in the wake of a devastating war with aliens. We had done that for Image, and then the collected edition we did through Dark Horse, and they did a digest-sized book that I thought was quite nice. But again, when that went out of print, we had the rights back, and IDW was interested in it, so we've done it as a hardcover for the first time, full size. Again, a really nice design job. This is one of the things that I like about doing creator-owned work, is if it goes out of print at one company, I can take it someplace else and we can do a new version of it. I did Superman Secret Identity for DC. If that goes out of print at DC, which it has, it's only going to come back in print if they feel like it. I don't have any control. So it's nice to have work that, you know, that I can say, let's do a new edition of this, let's make it really nice. In addition to the two you've mentioned, both of which Scott Dunbier has edited for IDW, we're also doing a hardcover collection of Superstar, the other Guerrilla project that I did with Stuart. There was a 48-page story, there was a short story, and then there was a whole bunch of development sketches and sort of false start sample pages and things like that. And we're taking all of that stuff and bringing it together, you know, in one hardcover package for the first time. So all of Superstar will be together in one book, and that'll be coming out early next year.
You know, I remember back in the 90s when Guerrilla actually folded, and there was a lot of talk about, well, what about these projects and where will it go? Now that we're seeing some of these back in print, is there a desire on your part to revisit some of these properties and maybe tell the next Shock Rocket story or the next Superstar story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know when we're going to get to it. I mean, Stuart is exclusive to Marvel. For a while there, was exclusive to DC. Part of the problem with the Shock Rockets is the TV movie rights have been sold. So if a movie were to get made, we'd have publishers who'd be eager to do the next step. But with those rights already gone, it's harder to find a place for it. Superstar is one, if we did more Shock Rockets, it would have to be me and Stuart. Superstar was a character who was pretty well fully conceived by the time Stuart came aboard. So he did a really nice costume design, but he feels like Superstar is my character that he illustrated, where Shock Rockets are ours. So if I was to do more Superstar and Stuart wasn't available, somebody else could do the artwork. That would be fine with both of us. So that's something that's kind of, you know, on my radar as something I'd like to do someday. But I'm so busy with other stuff, I don't know when. But I would like to do more.
You know, I have to ask the question that, you know, always gets asked, Aerosmith. Are we going to see any more Aerosmith?
Yes, we are. I'm working slowly on sort of an unusual project. The second Aerosmith project is going to be called Aerosmith, Far From the Fields We Know. And it's a novel. It's going to be a 60,000-word prose novel that's going to be heavily illustrated by Stuart. So think in terms of Stardust by Neil Gaiman and Charlie Vess, or the Fables novel that Bill Willingham did with Steve Lealoha illustrations. Something along those lines, where I'm going to write it as a prose novel, and then Carlos is going to make it look gorgeous with his illustrations.
So you said you have a lot of things sort of in the frying pan right now. What are some upcoming projects people can look forward to from you?
Well, in addition to Aerosmith, I'm still doing Astro City with Brent Anderson, and sometime next year we should be back to regular publication on that. We're getting stuff in the drawer, and things have been slowed down a little because of the reorganization at DC and the shuttering of Wildstorm, but we're going to move over to the DC imprint with Astro City. I've got a new series in the works called The Witchlands, which is, it's magic and fantasy and sort of a easy shorthand description of it is, it's like Astro City if Astro City were about urban fantasy instead of about superheroes. So it's about magic in the world around us, one step away from what we normally know. And but it also, like Astro City, it doesn't have a single cast of characters that it follows through adventures. It explores the world through different characters, different situations. I'm also doing a follow-up to the Superman Secret Identity miniseries that I did with Stuart. This one's called Batman Creature of the Night, and it doesn't feature any of the same characters, but it's a similar idea. John Paul Leon is doing the artwork. It looks absolutely stunning. And over at Dynamite Entertainment, Alex Ross and I are working on a project that's reviving the Jack Kirby creator-owned characters, Captain Victory and Silver Star and the Teen Agents and all of those guys, plus characters who've never been seen before in comics. Or, you know, Kirby created a project called Galaxy Green that only existed for two pages. Well, we've got Galaxy Green to put in this series. Kirby created other concepts, other ideas, from something called Thunderfoot to something called Dragon Boy, and just on and on and on. And just a ton of material that he planned to do someday or had pitched somewhere, but for one reason or another, he didn't get around to it. He was doing other things. And the Kirby estate has made all of this stuff available, so we're able to build kind of a new universe of wonder and fantasy out of great Jack Kirby creations. He did a portfolio called Gods that had five characters who later showed up in the New Gods and five characters who didn't. So we have the five unused New Gods to build new characters out of. He did a series of portfolio illustrations featuring heroes of Norse legend, and so we've got them to work with. He created everything from fantasy to science fiction to whacked out comic book superheroes to humor characters, and if it's something that that Kirby retained ownership of, so the Kirby estate still owns, we have access to it. Beyond that, as if that weren't enough, we optioned the Astro City movie rights to Working Title Films, who made Four Weddings and a Funeral, Love Actually, the Nanny McPhee movies, and I'm working on the screen treatment for the movie screenplay for them at the moment. So I'm keeping busy.
So you mentioned, you mentioned IDW, you mentioned Dynamite, you mentioned several different companies you're working with, and you also mentioned the shuttering of Wildstorm. What was your decision process to keep Astro City with DC, or, you know, the former Wildstorm, as opposed to moving it to one of these other independent companies that you have a relationship as well?
Well, it was pretty simple, really. The reason there was a question in the first place is because DC made the announcement that Wildstorm was closing the same day that they told the employees that Wildstorm was closing. They couldn't tell all the employees beforehand and then announce 2 weeks later. It'd be all over the internet by the end of the day. So it's the sort of thing where they had to do it all at once. But that meant that the people that I talked to didn't know what was going on until the day that it was announced. So they'd already made plans for, this is what we're going to do with the company-owned characters, this is what we're going to do with the licensed books. But the creator-owned books, they had to talk to the creators who own them. And they couldn't talk to us right away because they're busy having meeting after meeting after meeting with all the employees to tell them whether they have a job, whether they're going to have to move to another city. Just you know, these are human lives and livelihoods that were at stake here. The comic book could wait. But as a result, all they were able to tell me was, we want to talk to you about this, but we can't talk to you right now. It's perfectly understandable. But then, you know, multiple other publishers said, so what's going to happen to Astro City? Are the rights available? And I couldn't say, no, they're not, because I didn't know. So I discussed things with several other publishers, and they made very, very generous offers. But The bottom line is DC and Wildstorm, Jim Lee, in one form or another, has been publishing Astro City for 15 years. They've been very supportive. They've been very helpful. You know, we have a lot of reason to be loyal to them. They've always showed a great loyalty to us. So they would have had to give us a reason to leave. You know, they would have had to say, well, because of the new plan, we have to do X. And we would have said, oh, we don't like that. But they didn't. They said, here's the new plan. I can't go into it too much because they haven't announced it all yet. But once they were able to talk to us, they laid out the plan, and we basically said, well, that sounds good. If we'd known that the day they announced it, there never would have been any kerfuffle at all. It would have been just, well, of course we're staying with DC. But because they weren't in a position to communicate with us right away, we had offers from other publishers, and they were very, you know, if we needed to leave, we would have been happy to accept one of those offers. But we don't need to leave, so we're staying put where we've been treated well so far. The only real change that's going to happen with Astro City is going to be, you know, what company bullet is on the cover. And, you know, it's still the same company behind it.
Well, I really appreciate you sitting down with us today and taking time to talk to us. I'd like to wrap up the interview the way that we do every time, which is asking you, what's your issue? What is that one comic book that you've read somewhere along the way that just made you say, wow, this was great, or this was crazy, or something that you just love talking to people about?
That's a really tough question for me, not because I don't know what it is, because I don't know which one it is. You know, an easy choice would be Daredevil 120. Because that was the comic that made me a comic book fan. I'd always been the kind of guy who went into the library and looked for the section of a shelf that had a whole bunch of books by the same author. Because if it was a series and I read one and liked it, I could find out what happened next. And so I read my way through the children's library that way, looking for, oh, there's a lot of these Enid Blyton books. I'll read a bunch of them. Oh, look at the Oz books. I'll read all of those. Lloyd Alexander, you know, Danny Dunn, Tom Swift, anything. And reading Daredevil 120 sort of by chance, it was part one of a four-part story, but it also referred back to stuff that had happened 4 years earlier in Daredevil and had characters come in who'd been villains in Strange Tales or villains in Thor or villains in Spider-Man. And I'm looking at that and going, oh, it's not just a this is what could happen next. It's a there's multiple series, and characters from different series can meet each other and connect. And I was fascinated. And by the time that four-part story was over, I'd found a comic book store, and I'd started buying virtually the entire Marvel line. And so that issue, with all of its connections, made me a comics fan. Or I could pick something like Giant Size Avengers 2, which, to my mind, is the best single issue of Avengers there ever was. It's by Steve Englehart and Dave Cockrum. It's a very early issue in the Celestial Madonna saga, and it features the death of the Swordsman. And it features the return to the Avengers of my favorite Avengers character, Hawkeye. And the artwork is stunning. The story is really good. It's just, it's an action-filled character drama-filled, momentous book that it's just, you know, 38 pages of wow. And then I could go to something like, you know, various issues of Usagi Yojimbo or Bone or something, where it's not merely that the story is good. It's that the package, the cover, the logo, the design on the editorial page, the back cover, that everything in this book, the quality of the paper, the ink on the paper just says, this is a beautiful object. So where something like Daredevil or that Avengers sucked me into that world, books like Jeff Smith's Bone and Stan Sakai's Usagi Yojimbo make me go, this book is a beautiful work of art. Plus it has a story that sucks you in. So it's really tough to pick just one. If I have to, I think I'll pick the Giant Size Avengers. But I'm very, very lucky that I don't have to.
Well, thank you very much for sitting down with us. You've been listening to Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and graphic novels.